This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Podcast time. This week, I was lucky enough to get in the studio, Stacey Pullin. Stacey is one of a big kind of techno legend from Detroit. Been doing or been in the scene for 29 years professionally, and has kind of forged the way Detroit scene in techno is kind of had the impact on the rest of the world. Absolutely loved sitting down with him and having a conversation. Had an amazing history lesson on Detroit, which was kind of pretty amazing for me personally. And I'm sure you will all love it as well. So without further ado, Stacey Pullin. There we go. We're live. Stacey Pullin, how's it going, man?
Hey, man. I'm good, man. Make the trek all the way, 12-minute drive all the way over here.
It's the best thing about Detroit. Like, there's no traffic ever.
Right, exactly. It's you know, especially in this winter time, you know.
Yeah. We got dumped on last night. Yeah. Not last night, the night
before. A couple
before.
Of nights, yeah. I was in L.A. over the weekend, well, on Saturday to Sunday, yeah. And my wife was like, we got snow, so you might be a little delayed. I'm like, oh, okay, that's not actually a bad thing. I want to spend a little bit more time in L.A. just to get a little sunshine.
Yeah.
You know, get my tan, you know, like.
It's kind of nice out in L.A. right now, though. The weather's, like, just, like, perfect. Yeah. Although I'm not a huge fan of L.A. itself.
Right,
but
right.
It's It's definitely, winter is here in Detroit, put it that way. Yeah. I was literally saying, like, a few days ago to a friend that we haven't had like any snow, it's not got cold, and now it's like
right shit. Yeah, it's like no in between, you know. It's like summer, 2 weeks of fall, and then wintertime, you know. Even if it's not snow, you know.
Totally. Did you grow up here?
I grew up in Detroit, man. You know, this is my side of town where I kind of grew up you know. I mean, I have to catch the bus to work from high school, you know. I'm driving down here. I'm like, yep, I know all these places. yep.
What was it like growing up here?
It was, I don't know, if you seen the this movie. It was based on the Young Boys Incorporated.
Okay. No, what's it called?
Yeah, it's called YBI. I think it's called YBI. But growing up as a teenager, you know, that was like the height of
it. What year was this?
The 80s. So I, you know, I would say from like in 81 is like when I started understanding the social aspect of growing up in Detroit, you know. It was around, it was beginning of the crack epidemic, you know, and it was, you know, I remember seeing girls that used to have crushes on back in the day. And then 3 years later, like, man, the neighborhood girl is so and so, you know?
Yeah.
But it was a good, for me, it was, I understood that I needed to stay away from certain people and certain crowds. I mean, music was always a part of what, you know, me growing up anyway. So I think that was a savior, you know? You know, you grow up in the city and you know, product of Detroit public schools as well. Yeah. So, you know, we had a lot of resources back in the days, but as time went on, you know, you saw the school system sort of kind of dwindle a little bit, but you know, it was, I was in sports and basketball and playing, in the band and stuff like that. So I kind of steered away from the street aspect of it, you know, which was kind of, it was, I don't know. It was like, I was the chosen one because all of my friends, man, you know, the guys who are a little bit older than me, they always sort of kind of looked out because they knew that I wasn't that type of guy,
to
go around, you know, and they were, you know, they would tease me a lot, but it was still, I still, they had my respect and I had their respect, you know what I mean? So it was a quite interesting time growing up in the 80s because, you know, that all of those things that was going on.
Yeah, well, I watched a documentary that was on the BBC they did it on the BBC years ago, but I watched it recently called Requiem of Detroit.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah, yeah.
And I obviously knew a lot about Detroit history, but I didn't know, like, that much.
Right.
And I didn't know kind of how it started with, like, Henry Ford kind of being the main reason why the divide in the communities, and then obviously from that on comes into the crack epidemic and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Detroit's been through some shit, man.
Man, we had crisis before the crisis.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Literally.
Before the housing crisis that happened, before the economic crisis, we've always been that way because of, you know, we relied so much on one industry to make or break our lives that, you know, once all of the, you know, once the riots happened back in 68, you know, everybody left.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a pivotal point in the history of Detroit, you know, because we have so much rich history, whether it be the way we are geographically, you know, a lot of, immigrants came here to work in the car automotive industry.
Yeah, huge,
you know, we're the only, I mean, the, you know, us being across from Canada, you know, having that trade embargo where, you know, trucks coming over and bringing in goods and vice versa, you know, import, export, you know, and we're the only city that can look south to Canada.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just those little small little footnotes just for you don't know.
It's mad, isn't it? When you're at Hart Plaza, your phone, sometimes your phone signal turns to Canadian and you're just like, damn, we are this close.
Exactly.
Literally, Canada's there. It's mad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
I take it your parents grew up here.
Yeah, parents grew up here.
So they were here during the riots and then hung about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you grow up without a lot of resources, man, you don't really have a choice but to just kind of stick it out, you know? And, you know, being from Detroit, most of the people, you know, who got hit hard with, you know, the riots and, you know, the businesses closing and, you know, people going out to the suburbs, you know, it kind of, you know, it was, what are we going to do? We're just going to kind of stick it out, you know?
Yeah,
and, you know, we build a rich heritage here in Detroit, but at the same time, you know, we sort of kind of got left behind economically where, you know, we were sort of kind of left out on a lot of resources and opportunities that, you know, that needed to be, you know, given to us or So that was a pretty pivotal point in our history as well, you know.
It's kind of amazing, even if you see Detroit now, if you go to most other cities in the world and you come to Detroit, and Detroit is a very famous city, right? It's got a lot of history, good and bad.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know about the bad side of the history. A lot of people know the glory days.
Right, right.
all of the, even with the music, right? Motown, obviously techno, and yeah. people still think it's that now.
Yeah, yeah. I remember a few years ago, I was in a taxi in England, in London, and I told the taxi driver I was from Detroit. He was like, oh, yeah, me and my wife, you know, we used to go to all of the concerts. They used to come over here and play for us at all, you know, the Temptations, Four Top Supremes, blah, 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 blah. You know, we used to go to these concerts when they come here, and it was, you know, we used to have the best time. And, you know, and I was telling him, like, okay, well, you know, that was great, you know.
Yeah.
But now, you know, the reason why I'm over here is because of the Detroit techno.
Yeah.
Aspect of the second, you know, I wouldn't say the second generation, but another movement and music that's from Detroit as well.
Yeah,
you know, and he found that very interesting because now, you know, it's, I would say the Detroit techno scene when we first started was sort of like the Motown, the electronic Motown
totally.
Scene because you had that sound.
Yeah.
You know, you had that movement, you had the artists who were sort of feeding off of one another, music coming out nonstop, you know, competition with your boy, but you know, it's a great competition, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So
why Detroit though? Why do you think the whole, like, from Motown to techno, why do you think?
Well, I think I know for a fact that one theory is because of the car automotive industry. You know, a lot of our parents, you know, worked in the automotive industry. My dad worked for Chrysler back in the day, and he used to come back and say, yeah, I worked with this machine who helped build the transmission for this part. And it was, you know, working with machines and robots. You know, there's a cadence in the factory where, you know, these stamping cadence, you know what I mean?
You know,
systematic, what they call it, assembly line. You know, everything's is a rhythm, you know? I mean, that's in my opinion, that's part of what it was. But also,
never thought of that.
Yeah, but also, you know, like I said, after the riots and after, you know, in the 80s and stuff, we didn't really have a lot of resources. So we kind of, you know, took to music as to, you know, an outlet for our creative side of us, you know. For us, you know, the guys who were not in the street, you know, we felt, but also I think it's because of the radio back in the day.
Okay.
You know, we had, you know, Electrifying Mojo.
Okay.
You know, Electrifying Mojo. I don't know if you know the story of Electrifying Mojo.
Tell me about this. This is a lesson.
So Electrifying Mojo was a DJ that came on WGPR radio here. And his intro coming on, he would come on every night at 12 o'clock midnight.
Yeah.
He would, his 15-minute introduction would be the landing of 2001 Space Odyssey. The mothership, the Midnight Funk Association has arrived. And he would just play some Prince that was like unreleased. He would go into some Kraftwerk. He would go into some B-52s. He would go into some other like electronic music. But you know, it was based on what he wanted to do. He didn't follow payola. He didn't care. I mean, but at that time, it was more freestyle of a DJ where they can play. They were actually playing the music. You know,
they got to pick.
Yeah, so. You know, he would open our minds and our ears to so much different music that you didn't expect for a black radio city, a black radio DJ in the city to play.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we got hip to B-52s, man. Mm. I mean, you know, Depeche Mode, Duran Duran, and as well as the black R&B music. Yeah, yeah, you know, you know, Prince used to come in town and do exclusive interviews with this guy and give him like only mixes that he only gave to Mojo.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was, and you know, then we had dance shows. Mm. You know, this is more of the more fun side of Detroit, when how we got our inspiration, other than just the economical side. This is more the party scene.
Yeah.
you know, how we got how we party back in the days, you know.
Well, I guess that's the thing, is when a city's struggling, there's always going to be an underbelly of that, where people have to be, they want to have a nice life. They want to celebrate and they want to kind of make themselves feel good. So they're going to make a party.
Right.
Somehow.
Right. Right.
And they're going to go to those, congregate to those areas where everyone, where there's a community built and everyone can kind of be one together.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 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 I think that, you know, One of the things that I remember growing up and listening to the radio was the fact that a lot of this music that I was hearing was based on, you know, black culture. We have a way of expressing ourselves through rhythm, through music, and it kind of spilled off into the electronic area as well. You know, I mean, the guys like Electrifying Mojo, he was one of the first DJs to play the electronic music. You know, like guys from Derek and Juan, they would go down there and just hang out.
Yeah.
Because he was fascinated on
what they were
doing. He's like, who are these young guys annoying the hell out of me? Knocking on his door.
Trying to play my records.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know. And then once he heard, you know, Juan's music and Derek's and Kevin's and everything, he was like, oh, these guys are onto something, you know? So that's a small part of electronic. Yeah. I mean, of Electrifying Mojo story, you know? Yeah. So he stayed on for years and, you know, I have access to some tapes that he used to.
Really?
Yeah, man. When you listen to this stuff, he would play New Wave.
Wow.
You know, I mean, all the stuff that, you know, this is why probably, you know, the generation of my generation of DJs and people who go out can appreciate, you know, things that just wasn't rap music, you know, because this was in the beginning of the time of rap, you know?
Yeah.
But he would still play Run DMC, LL Cool J, and still show love to them, but he would also play a variety of things, everything, man. And I know for a fact that's what really, you know, clued us in into what else was going on in the world and broadened our minds for as far as music goes.
Because there's the hip hop in Detroit is still massive, and there's still such a huge hip hop scene that I'm completely oblivious to, if I'm totally honest, because it's just not really something that I love hip hop music, but I just don't understand the whole culture, if that makes sense, because I was never brought up around that.
Right.
But over the years, because techno kind of, it started here and then it kind of left.
Yeah.
What was, you've been around since pretty much since day one, kind of. So like, what was the transitioning from it leaving?
What's your
thoughts on the reason why it left?
Well, I would say partly, I wouldn't say it left, but I think that the energy shifted
a bit,
you know, to when, because we've always been a fan of and show and had a much mutual respect for Germany.
Mm.
You know, and when the Germany scene, when it kind of came on, you know, they've been going on. I mean, you ask Sven Vath, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know, I think once we started traveling, and well, I'm part of the second generation, so I wasn't, you know, there when Derek and Kevin and Juan and them first started traveling. Yeah. So I'm considered like second generation of Detroit techno. So those guys started traveling and doing shows over in Europe and realizing that, wow, this is where our market is. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, Kevin Sarnason doing Top of the Pops with Inner City.
Yeah.
Nice. You know, Derek and Kevin playing Hacienda.
Yeah.
You know, Juan doing his thing, and, you know, it would be gay clubs, but it would be a club that was just accept it with the music, before there was a thing here. I mean, we always had our scene here in Detroit, but it wasn't nothing. It was, you know, this was more of the white European scene that sort of gave them a little bit more insight on what how powerful this music
is. Yeah,
you know, that's my opinion where as to where it sort of went over to Europe a little bit because even I moved over to Europe.
Really? Where did you go?
I moved to Amsterdam.
Oh, mate, it's beautiful city, man. It's a beautiful city.
Yeah. So I moved over to Amsterdam, and I, you know, my thing was is when I moved over to Amsterdam, I was sort of being a teacher of the Detroit sound for the club culture over there, and but also being a student to what wasn't coming to Detroit. So that was, for me, that was, I got the best of both worlds.
Because they weren't the days of the internet, right? Where you couldn't just go on Beatport and buy music. You have to find a record shop that was importing music from.
And they had a lot of those in Amsterdam. I mean, we used to go there.
Still do.
Hours. Just go there for hours, three or four different record shops, and just go there. And of course, you know, free weed. Not for one say free weed, but go to the coffee shops and just like, I mean, not even go to the coffee shops. They'd be firing up weed behind the counter
everywhere
at the the store. Yeah. You know, so I'm like, got my stack of records, and you know,
I love Amsterdam.
You want espresso? You want coffee? You want a weed? Here, hit this. You know. So
what year was that then that you moved?
That was in 93.
Nice.
It was supposed to be for 1 month.
Yeah.
You know, I put out my first record end of 92, my first solo record of 92. And I had $500 in my pocket as an advance and a plane ticket to Amsterdam. That was like.
That was your advance.
That was my advance. Yeah. You know. And Derek.
What label was that?
Was it
that
was Fragile.
With? Okay.
Which is Transmat's label. And Derek was like, okay, I'll give you $500 in your pocket and a plane ticket to Amsterdam. He had an apartment over there. Yeah. So you don't have to worry about any place to stay. You can sleep in the spare bedroom. I'm like, okay, cool. A little boy from Detroit, of course. Love it, man, you know. And got over there, and 1 month turned out to be a year and a half. I came back. I stayed over there about 4 months, and I came back home. And I told my mom, I'm like, okay, I'm coming back home to pick up some more clothes.
Yeah.
You know, I came home for about a week or so, and I went back and stayed over there, man. And it was the most important time for me to be over there, you know. So from there, it was. I stayed over there for a year and a half, and then I came back home to Detroit. Because I'm like, okay, I need to start my foundation here,
though.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's cool being over there for a year and a half, but now I want to come home and, you know.
Get into the culture.
Right, right. So that right there was part of I mean, and a lot of DJs did that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of just Detroit DJs. Yeah. So we sort of kind of, you know, made a little move over to Europe for a bit because we knew that's where the market was. We still had parties. We still had DJs coming. I mean, there's a bunch load of DJs and artists. But once we realized that more of the market, it's just like the jazz guys back in the 1940s and 50s, you know, Miles Davis and John Coltrane, they had to go over to Paris. I mean, you see old photos
everywhere.
Of them
yeah.
in Paris, suited, looking like all spiffy, you know, doing their shows. And, you know, staying over there, getting treated like royalty and come back home and like, wow, this is a complete contrast on, you know, what we want to be appreciated for.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
So that's part of one of the reasons why that, you know, it was a little shift in the plates, if you will, you know?
Totally. It makes complete sense as well, if I'm honest. It's, for me, like, electronic music is a mixture of cultures. It's purely to allow people to escape. It's escapism.
Yeah.
And everybody around the whole of the world wants to escape.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think, especially in places like Berlin, Germany, places like Paris, like the major cities of the world, there's always a community of people that are kind of don't fit in.
Right.
And they all want a place to kind of get out.
Release.
Yeah. And and you have that all around the world. And I think that's where you kind of get artists, really creative people. And it makes complete sense that that was the situation.
That is true. That is true. But after a while, you know, once artists and you know, speaking from a Detroit perspective, you know, you wanna be able to see people of your own peers appreciate it too.
Totally. You know what I mean?
You know, and we had all those things. You know, I think from an artistic point of view and producer point of view, I think Juan Atkins had more of a connection to Detroit crowd than any of us.
Yeah.
Because Juan, he did like Detroit Electro, yeah, which was, you know, funkier.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, even Missy Elliott sampled some of that.
That's the thing. It kind of had that crossover between like funk, soul, hip hop, kind of, and then electro.
I remember the first guy that I started making music with, a hood guy, he was like, he was like, Juan Atkins, Model 500, Technicolor, no UFOs. He was like, that, I mean, you heard that on the radio too, though. But I was more being the artist. I was more super underground, and it was like, I appreciate it. I like it. But my thing was more deep, you know, more emotion, you know. But we also had a lot of radio shows from the DJs as well that sort of influenced the city. I mean, at one point you had Kevin, Derek, Juan, and more importantly, Jeff Mills.
Mm.
Jeff Mills was basically the guy who showed Detroit what you could do with two turntables and a mixer. He was the more
on radio.
On radio. Yeah. This guy was on twice a day.
Really?
Twice a day in the lunchtime and at night.
What station was that on?
That was on, he was on WJLB.
Yeah.
So you could imagine just hearing, you know, Run DMC or Janet Jackson or Prince or Whitney Houston. And then
ripping techno.
And then Jeff Mills would come on, The Wizard, WJLB FM 98. And he would come on and play some crazy Wizard of Oz intro. We off the Wizard. What is it? And just break into some 140 BPM like crazy, like it was he mixed hip hop with electro, with industrial, with new wave and techno.
Yeah. Wow.
It was like turntablism. You know? I'll send you some links because there's some stuff on SoundCloud that, you know, I mean, and we all used to like record from cassettes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so love sound that. Quality sometimes
it's
would
terrible.
Be great.
Yeah, yeah.
if you recorded it on your mom's, you know, big stereo, it'd sound okay. Amazing, but if you recording it on a small little boombox, you're like, oh man, but we didn't care, man. Yeah, yeah. You know. So, but he was the one who basically showed what people could do with two turntables in a mixer. I would definitely give. I remember being 15 years old, going to this club in Ann Arbor, called the Nectarine Ballroom, and I was 15. Wasn't even supposed to be in the club, but I was up in the balcony overlooking him and just watching him do his thing. You know, it's I didn't care about dancing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he had his Roland 727 along with his four turntables, and I was just like amazed, you know. And he actually grew up on this side of town.
Yeah.
You know, and some of my boys, we would be riding in a car, and they knew where he lived. And he had like a Volkswagen Scirocco, you know. And every
those were big in the day.
Yeah, exactly.
They were like nice cars back in the day.
So we would just be cruising, you know, and guys would be like, yep, Jeff Mills home. He's home. He's probably making a tape right now. Best, man. I'm like, yep. I mean, we're like, shoot, you know. So it was like, you know, how people drive around in LA. Like, this is so and so's house. This is so and that. That was the royalty, man. Yeah, you know. And then you would see him perform. You see him DJ, and you're like, wow, this guy is just like. I mean, he still has that same effect today when you see him DJ. You know. So we had all of those outlets, you know, on the radio. You know, which gave us a lot of variety of inspiration and thought process on what we do.
Mm. What happened to the radio?
R&B and rap, took MTV over. You know, I mean, that's pretty much once MTV came along and started, you know, pushing their brand of you know, pop music and you know, still even rap wasn't even played much on MTV back in the days. You know what I mean? You had to be approved.
Yeah, it wasn't allowed to be, was it?
Right, right. So, yeah, and I, you know, and then there wasn't just, I mean, it was basically when payola started, you know, when people started to, you know, companies started having, you know, to pay to play their tracks on the radio and marketing and promotion and stuff like that. That's what happened to radio pretty much. You know, Mojo, you know, ran his course with the things that he did. We still had radio shows, but, you know, the younger generation, you know, they were still not quite sure what to do with the underground techno and electronic music, you know. It was, I mean, it was, hip-hop just came and just changed the culture, you know? Yeah. Pretty much, that's what basically what it is. I mean, these guys, we can't compete with these guys who have these budgets.
100%.
You know?
Well, yeah, in America, it's just, you have to pay a shit ton of money to get your music on radio now.
Yeah.
But there's the one thing growing up in the UK, we have such an amazing radio kind of scene.
Yes.
That's like still so
yes.
And it feels like it's not going anywhere. Yeah. It's just kind of part of the culture. Like radio was the one of the reasons why I got into music.
Right.
You know what I mean? Listening to Pete Tong every Friday night.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like there's that here for anyone in America.
Man, at one point here in Detroit, all the guys who I mentioned earlier, we had to basically pay to be on the radio.
Really?
The only black station that was black owned, WGPR Radio, which is probably, I'm not sure if it still is or not, but they offered us a spot to do every Saturday nights from 12 to 4 a.m.
Yeah.
I mean, it's late, but that's party time.
Yeah.
People, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in the early days, it was still like, man, that's kind of late. You know, we still want to be a little prime time.
Yeah.
You know, you're giving us the graveyard shift, which is great for club aspect, but radio aspect, you know, who's going to be up to 4 o'clock in the morning just listening to the radio?
No one really.
But they gave us the opportunity to showcase radio featuring our music, but in order to do it, they wanted money.
Yeah.
You know? Almost like payola, but,
yeah.
You know, it was a couple of $1,000s to
have
for.
What year was this?
It was like early 90s.
Still a lot of money.
Yeah. This was, I think, let me see, I would say mid 90s.
Yeah.
This was after I came back from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny because Minx, DJ Minx,
She was
the voice of the radio.
Oh, really?
You know, she would, you know, introduce the mixes and talk a little about what's going on. She had the perfect voice. She was, you know, that's why she's like the sort of like the godmother of Detroit techno, you know what I mean? Because she's been around that long, you know. And it worked out for a while, but, you know, we were, you know, 12 guys, you know, 8 to 12 people having to, like, you know, fork up money, you know. I mean, it was okay, but at the same time, it was like, man, you know, it wasn't like we were, you know, making the fees that we're, you know, people make today, you know?
Yeah.
But it was a good experience, but I mean, it was short lived.
Runs its course.
Yeah, it was short lived.
When you have to pay to do something like that,
that you
absolutely love, it's your passion, but it's like.
Yeah, and then, you know, so so when you mentioned BBC and, you know, and Pete Tong and Radio 1 and all those stations where it's just like an institution being over there, you know?
It is.
And it's, you know, every time, you know, it was times when I would go over to England and make it a point to listen to the radio just to see fill the pulse of the city.
Yeah.
you know,
100%.
And you know, and I'm like, they playing this on the radio?
Yeah.
Oh man, this, I'm like, the, you know, America's got a, such a long way to go.
I think it's just different cultures.
Right.
I think that's the thing. Is like, I don't think you're ever gonna get what you have in the UK on, like, you don't get that anywhere,
right.
Really. Maybe maybe the Netherlands is the kind of the closest place where you can get, like, and maybe Germany, like, dance music into the charts.
Yeah,
obviously, you can get dance music into the charts in America.
Right.
But it's, like, you're very commercial, like Calvin and
people
like that, which is still dance music. It's still great to hear Four to the Floor in the charts, but it's not like in the UK, you can have records that come from the club.
Right, exactly. Like pure house music.
Pure house music.
You know what I mean?
If you know what I mean.
Yes,
I think the last one was the Burns record, Talamanca, which I don't know if you've heard it, but that's literally just straight up, zero vocals,
right?
Just an instrumental.
Right.
And that got A-listed on Radio 1.
Right.
Yeah, and you're like, to get A-listed on Radio 1, you have to be doing something right.
Right, right.
But we all know how much it costs to get A-listed on radio in America. And we're not making that much money in house and techno to get. What was it like releasing music in the 90s?
So on the street called Gratiot, which is an Eastern Market area, we've dubbed Gratiot as Techno Boulevard.
Yeah.
You had KMS, which is Kevin Saunderson's studio, which was the big studio that had the SSL engineers, and because you know him making Big Fun and Good Life just sort of blew up,
bought some money,
you know, exactly. You know, the 2-inch tape, Simpico, and all that old school, you know, engineer coming in. But in the back, there was Studio B, where a lot of pre-production was going on. You know, guys like MK was back there doing his thing, you know. I was back there doing my thing a little. And then upstairs you had Metroplex, which was Juan's label. Juan did, had his crew.
I love that label.
You know?
Serious.
Yes.
Serious records.
And then you had Transmat, which was upstairs as well, which was Derek. Now, for me personally, Derek was the one who I gravitated more to when it came to me releasing my music because it was just his energy and his not giving a shit about what people thought about his music.
Yeah,
it was just more emotional. So between those three studios, it was 20, 30 guys
doing
constantly, man. And it was like this, like I said earlier, it was just this whole nucleus of creativity going on. And you know, you had a couple of guys who did edits, like 2-inch, you know, like what, quarter inch edits, you know what I mean, with the razor blade, with the chalk and the splicer and stuff, you know what I mean. So it was a good energy to be around there, because I mean, I was still young and didn't have a record out, so I'm around these three studios, like, man, this is the life. This is what I want.
Yeah,
you know, these guys are wearing T-shirts and blue jeans and, you know, doing their music, being artists, man, you know. And I'm coming from 2 years of college and university, majoring in communication, you know, sort of wanted to be a journalist a little, but still music was in my life, you know. And I come home and I see this, and I was just like, you know, just, you know, like amazed on what was going on. And at that time, the Music Institute, which was the first dub, the first techno club in America.
Okay.
You know, that was here as well.
Where was that?
That was from 87 to 89. Mm. Yes, yes. So the Music Institute opened, and it was just four walls, a strobe light, speakers, wood floor, and the DJ booth, like, at the top.
Yeah.
You know? So you would look at the DJ booth, like... And...
Where was that?
That was on Broadway. You know where... how can I say? The YMCA is?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So in
downtown?
Mm-hmm, downtown. Okay, yeah. And that club opened up a lot of eyes because it was a members-only club.
Okay.
You know, so you had to have a membership to get in there.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't serve alcohol. It was only a juice bar. It opened up at 12.
Could you imagine that happening today?
No, not at all.
Only a juice bar.
Only a juice bar.
Detroit was healthy back
in
the day.
Yes, man. Yep. But see, the thing was is that everybody was in the parking lot before.
Yeah.
You know, we had drinks. Yeah. You had whatever you indulged in. You did it before you get into the club.
Yeah.
And you just let the music take you away to do the rest.
What was downtown like then?
It was rough, man.
Yeah, I bet.
It was rough. I had a problem one time, but I was hanging out with the wrong dudes. Back to my teenage days. But overall, it wasn't much because, you know, downtown was desolate time, you know? It was just a place to sort of, you still had, you know, a few clubs, but it was really desolate. No businesses. There was really small mom and pop shops that were left down there. You know, liquor stores, wig shops, you know, small little boutique stores. Yeah. I mean, I used to date this girl whose mom, she was a fashion designer. You know where the John Varvatos store, I don't know if you, it's on Woodward and John R. It was a John Varvatos store that was on the ground level.
Yeah.
And then there were lofts above that. My first loft that I ever been to in my life, and the elevator came up into the living room. I'm like,
that's amazing, isn't it?
I'm downtown Detroit. This is great. You know, and the Music Institute was right there, and you know, but it was quite dangerous. You know, I mean, you know, it wasn't like it is now, which is a bit better, but still has a long way to go. You know.
Yeah, I think I've been coming to Detroit for 7 years. I've been living here for 4.5
years. Yeah.
And when I first came, I'd stayed in the A-Loft downtown.
Yeah.
And, it was still pretty rough then. Mm-hmm. And, like, everyone was like, just don't fucking walk about.
I know. I think the best time to come to Detroit was doing the Movement Festival because that's when you saw a lot of the Rainbow Coalition of people. You know, and even the native, the local people started to understand how powerful this music was. If you know, bringing all these people over from all across the world to Detroit to,
40,000 people into the city, like, it's, for the economy alone, it's unbelievable. I tell everyone that is the best time to come to Detroit is during Movement.
Right.
Purely because you get to see the city at its best. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to the city.
Yeah,
but it's like,
I say the same thing,
there's just a different aura around the city. People are happier. People are making money.
Yeah.
The businesses are doing well.
Yeah.
Hotels are doing well. Yeah. Like mom and pop stores are doing well. Yeah. Restaurants are doing well. And it's what those guys have done, guys and girls have done, that festival. And they run the jazz festival
right after.
Which is like the week after or two weeks after. And again, that does the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's really important that those things keep happening.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, having it downtown, and know the city, once they realized, like the very first festival, once they saw how many people it was on the first night, I remember playing and the dusk set, like, because it ended at midnight. I remember playing and it was just about to get dark. And I remember playing and I played this track that had Martin Luther King's speech, "I Have a Dream." I still think about it and talk about it to this day, and it still gives me goosebumps.
Goosebumps, you saying it.
Man, it was the first night of the festival.
Yeah.
And it came together last minute.
Yeah.
So people didn't know what to expect. And it was free.
Yeah.
You know?
This was when it was Dempf. Was it Dempf, right?
Yes. And I remember just seeing police officers were like, wow, we've never seen a crowd this big downtown Detroit ever.
Yeah.
You know, even when the Pistons won it back in 89. You know, sports fans is a bit different than this, you know, just regular people. Yeah. But it was so amazing. And their thing was, it's like, it's a million people here. It's yeah. 1 million people. And that's how many people yeah. they thought it was yeah, because yeah. they've never seen that big of a crowd, sure, you know? Yeah. So that was a great moment in Detroit's, you know, history where they understood how powerful this music was
yeah.
and how great of opportunity it was to highlight the city
yeah.
in a positive light, you know? You know, I can remember a quick story. I can remember some friends and my manager and my old manager from Amsterdam. Him and his friends were coming to Detroit. Mm. They landed from Amsterdam. They came through to immigration, and immigration officers asked, "Why are you coming to Detroit?"
Yeah.
You
know.
And we're coming here for a festival, you know, Detroit Music Festival. And then he was like, he couldn't believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, "Hey, Tom, come over here. Get a load of this story. These guys are coming to Detroit as being tourists for this festival." And they were just like, they couldn't believe it.
Yeah. I still like that.
Right.
Like, for me, traveling around America, not so much in Europe because they don't really know much about the history of Detroit, but I go to LA and meet somebody new and they'll be like, "Where do you live?"
Right.
I'm like, "I'm in Detroit."
Right.
And they're like, "Why are you in Detroit?" That's
the same thing I said when I first met you in San Diego. Yeah. I was like, "Oh, that really?"
Yeah. And that's always the, like, it's always that question, like, why are you here? And right. I think that made me question it myself.
Right.
So for
right.
so long.
Yeah.
And yep. it's only been the last 6 months where I'm like, no, I actually like it here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I lived in New York and I love New York. Mm-hmm. I'd move to New York tomorrow.
Right.
If I could justify paying that much money and not
tell
being
me about
there,
it.
If you know what I mean.
Tell me about it. That was my biggest thing too. Yeah. I'm like, no way. And to share walls.
Yeah. Exactly. And then have to pay for a studio somewhere right. else.
Yeah, like, completely agree.
It's just, for me, it's just like, it's not even, we're never at home because yeah. we tour so much.
Right, right.
So why, I want to enjoy something, but I also don't want to be ripped off.
Right, yeah.
We work hard
yeah.
and we're very fortunate that we earn reasonably good money for what we do, but yeah. I'm not also going to piss that down a drain to live in a tiny apartment in New York.
That's one of the reasons why I've stayed here in Detroit, you
yeah.
know, because cost of living is pretty great, but also, you know, it gives me a release on, you know, I could have moved to New York,
yeah.
you know, but my thing is that the reason why I stayed in Detroit is because I do get a chance to travel.
Totally.
You know,
yeah.
if I didn't travel,
you would be
I
would
have gone.
100.
Yeah.
And yeah, I get
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I split my time between here and the UK.
Yeah.
And I think if I was here all the time, yeah, I get it.
Right.
But I like the snow.
Yeah.
Like, I like it being cold where people here, like, hate it.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm not used to it. It's right. not what I've been brought up with, yeah. if you know what yeah. I mean. Although yeah. it gets pretty cold in the UK. But
yeah, yeah.
There's something special about this city that I can't put into words.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's the spirit, man. You just come here and just feel it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's definitely interesting, and it keeps you on your toes.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very long way to go to where it should be.
Yeah.
But it's slowly moving there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've been to, I would, you know, a lot of people, a lot of my friends over the years have moved to, like, the closest city that's big city is, like, Chicago.
Beautiful city.
You know? And
Chicago.
That's, yeah, yeah, yeah. And a lot of my friends, I mean, to New York, too, but most of them, if you're working, like yeah. if you're in a working world, you go to Chicago because it's close, it's
totally.
The region. You
yeah,
know, if
yeah.
you're working for a Fortune 500 company, it's, you know, you work in the same region.
Yeah.
You know, you got, you know, contacts here and you know, in Chicago. And I remember going to Chicago back in the 80s, and I remember saying, like, that this is how Detroit should be
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
will be. in 20 years from now.
And now we're all saying in 20 years' time, Detroit will be.
Yeah, yeah. We made improvements, though. We definitely made improvements. But my thing is that I've also seen how Chicago has changed.
Yeah.
And how it got gentrified as well.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. And then understanding how it's been happening here in Detroit, you know, it had to happen. You know, something like that had to happen because, or else, you know, we had to have some type of economic turnaround in the city in order for us to be competitive, you know, socially, resources to be able to understand that Detroit is a great city.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
What's your thoughts on that, though, on the whole gentrification? Because it happens, right?
Yeah.
It happens everywhere. It doesn't, happens in every single neighborhood in the world eventually.
Yeah.
If the economy kind of lets it. What's your thoughts on it here? Because you've been here from day one.
Right, right. But, you know, and I've been here from day one, but I understand that it needed to happen. And it's a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow, especially the local people here, to understand that, you know, you need some type of change in government structure, economic structure in order to rise the city up, like I said. I understood that because, you know, I've traveled
a lot,
I've seen it, I've seen it happen. But for the local people, they think that, oh, they come in and take the city away from us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which, I mean, it may happen. I mean, it does happen. But, you know, what's the other alternative?
There isn't.
You know, the alternative would be to continue, you know, to have the same... The same, you know, rerun over the last, since the 60s, since the year before, you know, year before I was born. But
just get that one in there.
So, you know, I understood that the logic behind having to do that. And, you know, like I said, seeing the city transition and understanding what was going on downtown, you know, Detroit's a neighborhood city.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been thriving off the neighborhoods, you know. And but I would like to see a little bit more energy put into the neighborhoods as well. You know, of course, we know downtown is a main attraction. You need that in order to bring in companies and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, you know, and I did and I have been seeing over the years, you know, the communities in certain areas have been able to, you know, rise up a little. Like there's a...
Livernois.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to live right off Livernois,
really?
Like further south, you know. And, you know, these areas were once, you know, great for the community.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And to see it being, having a little care, it makes a big difference. Yeah.
It's tough, isn't it? Because it's so hard in such poor communities to kind of give a bit of life.
Yeah.
Right. And, but all it takes is a little bit of injection of cash and a little bit of care and in the community to like give back.
And people have, you know, once they see that, they have a little bit more pride.
Totally.
About a community.
Yeah.
You know?
So important.
And that's what. That's what we didn't have back in the day. We didn't have a sense of community.
Yeah.
You know, we had block clubs and, you know, you have your mother, you know, and her friend down the street and like, okay, well, you guys stay out of trouble. You know, if I see you fighting, if I see you do something wrong, you know, I'm going to tell your mother on you. You know, everybody's mother know each other, you know, which was great. But, you know, from a business standpoint or for just a resource standpoint, we were still lacking a lot of those opportunities that needed to, you know, bring a bit more pride into the city.
Yeah.
Totally. You know. So it's great to see the little small changes, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just like, okay, you know.
It takes time.
It takes time. It takes time, you know.
And I'm
happy to see the changing, you know, in my lifetime, I'm happy to see it. You know, I'm still able to appreciate it.
Totally.
You know,
yeah.
I went out. I'm gonna say I went. I don't go out much. I don't go out at all in Detroit. Let me rephrase that. But the few times that I have been out, I actually was like, wow, I wish I had this when we were growing up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I see now a lot of people who are a lot of cross cultures that are getting together now and enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, let's just be frank about it. Detroit is a segregated city.
100%.
You know? And
from all cultures.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Not just white and black.
Exactly.
From, like,
exactly.
Iraqi.
Man.
Like, Asia. It's so bad.
And we have a lot here.
Yeah.
You know?
Insane
and
amounts.
They all came to work, like we said, with Henry Ford in the car movement of industry.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but the riots kind of, you know, separated us into, pockets.
Yeah.
And but in the metropolitan area, we have so many. We got the biggest Middle Eastern population in
America.
In America.
Yeah.
You know, outside of the Middle East. So we have it here. It's just the fact that we don't have that public transit here. No. That you would see these people every day.
Everywhere.
Or I wouldn't say see these people, but see people every day of different walks of life.
It's true, yeah.
You know what
Unless
I mean?
Unless you're going to those specific areas.
Right, right, right. And
well, it's even, like, honestly, even me moving here, like, I'm the only white dude in this area.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
I'm literally the only white dude in this area.
Right, right.
And I used to live downtown. But yeah, it's different. It's very different.
Right.
Like, considering from where I grew up, if you saw where I grew up from, where I live in the UK, I live in the middle of the countryside.
Right.
It's like proper rural England.
Yeah.
And then to be here, it's chalk and cheese as well. It's apart.
Yeah. Right.
But I think you need people to kind of take a bit of a leap and just be like, we need to cross this boundary.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need to, like, be a community together for the greater good of the city.
Right, right.
And not even just the city, just life.
Yeah, and humanity, period. Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Me going to the barbershop in the corner is a completely different experience than me going to my barbershop in the UK.
Yeah, of course.
But I learned so much going to the barbershop there.
Right.
If you know what I mean. It's just fucking mind-blowing. But I think because of stereotypes that we all have, the media, life, everything. We've all had these stereotypes being portrayed upon all of us, right? Because some stereotypes are real. That's why they're stereotypes. Mm-hmm. But you also have to experience them yourself to learn that some of them aren't true.
Right, right.
And for me, Detroit is a city with so much culture and so many nice things about it that just isn't, the world isn't seeing.
Yeah, yeah.
America's not seeing. Chicago's not seeing, and it's down the road.
Right, right.
If you know what I mean. Like, Chicago, for me, is like a beautiful city, but look what's going on down there now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's bad.
Yes.
It's very bad. Yes. And you hear about that all the time.
Yeah.
But you come here, it's even worse here.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's going on, if you know what I mean? And the only way to make it better is to bring the communities together.
Right, that's what I mean. I mean, the community is very important when it comes to people having a sense of pride of where they're from, having respect for one another.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, you know, unfortunate that, you know, and most of the things that happen is because of economic status.
Yeah,
I mean?
Totally.
I mean, that's basically what it comes down to, you know. And, you know, people, it's unfortunate that it happens, but it's also unfortunate that, you know, that's the reality of you know, why people do things.
Yeah.
You know?
100%.
But, you know, growing up here and seeing the changes and, you know, understanding, you know, what's happening is also very fulfilling as well, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's probably another reason why that I've stayed here.
Stayed.
Yeah,
because makes sense.
I mean, it's a great seeing the transition, you know, and seeing the opportunities here, and you know, like I say, I was going to say that I went out a few times, and I'm like, wow, It was like for one of the first times I felt like, dang, I'm having a midlife crisis. I'm like, I want to be young again.
Yeah.
I'm totally. Like, man, this is great. You know, people dressing really cool.
Yeah.
Individuals, you know, artists, you know, artist workshops and, yeah. you know, from, you know, artists having showcases. I mean, I'm not talking about music art. I'm just talking about like
general
artists. Yeah. Period.
There's a lot of cool shit coming out of Detroit.
Exactly. I'm like, man, this wasn't here when I was growing up. It was more struggling and to have a voice.
Totally. Well, I think also the amazing thing is it's like what Williamsburg and what Brooklyn used to be of New York, right? But you've got a whole city like it.
Yeah.
So it used to be cheap to live in Brooklyn.
Right.
And it was kind of a little hood and it was a little bit dangerous, but you could live cheaply.
Yeah.
Whereas the whole city of Detroit, for majority of people, is very affordable, which means that if something's very affordable, you can get more creatives together.
Yeah, it's funny that you say the whole city because I would say maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I was in Torino, and I was with the guys who did Movement Torino.
Yeah.
And they had the guy, what's his name?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Philip Knight.
Okay.
The guy who owns Nike.
Okay, yeah. Phil Knight, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know who he was at first.
His book's amazing,
right,
by the way.
Right, right. Yeah. So we're speaking and we're standing just like this big castle.
Yeah.
You know, in the middle of the countryside in Torino. And he's there because the guys who do the Movement Festival family runs Kappa.
Okay.
You know, yeah, Kappa, yeah. The sports.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they're there, you know, with them because they're good friends. And we're speaking about, you know, economic struggles in Detroit and, you know, and I'm boasting my face, my chest. I'm like, yeah, you know, but there are a lot of bad. So we were talking about the struggles and crime and, you know, just social outlook on inner city life.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm like, well, so, you know, things happen in, you know, in Brooklyn, in New York, you know, in Chicago, parts of Chicago. And then he was like, well, you know, that's true. But when you talk about Detroit, it's all of Detroit, you know. And I'm like, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just, you know, one side.
No.
You know, it's like you got, like you said, you have Brooklyn, you have the Bronx, and then you have the South Side of Chicago, you had whatever, you know,
totally.
And you have Compton.
Yeah.
But it's all of Detroit when Detroit gets a black eye.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, and it's been slowly changing over the years because, you know, before COVID, you know, people, you know, opened up a lot of restaurants. There was a point where, you know, Detroit had, you know, there was actually like a foodie, you know.
It was like the fastest growing city for food.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Which was great. And that's had partly to do because of, you know, gentrification, which is all tie in to one another.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, which is great, but you know, like I said, the local people, when they haven't experienced anything like that, and when they don't know anything about that, it's like out of the ear. They don't understand. It goes right over their head, and they can't appreciate it. You know, which I'm glad that, like I said, I'm glad that a lot of the younger generation, the artists who are now understanding that this is a great opportunity, you know, seeing this transition in Detroit.
Yeah, it's super key. And I think I think Detroit actually allows people, I think there's going to be a lot of interest in businesses, a lot of interest in create like fashion companies, music artists, artists, chefs all come from here because it just allows people to be creative
and
kind of express themselves. What's your thoughts on the music scene right now here? I don't know about you, but when you say you're from Detroit, and some people know about techno, they're like, wow, Detroit's got the best techno scene in the world.
Mm.
And that's always my response. What do you think it needs?
I got so much to say. I'm just trying to get the right word to say it right. It needs, we have a few clubs that are pretty underground. I think that what we need is
it's tough, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough because I know what it needs because I've been around the world and I can just say, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah.
But from a marketing perspective to get people to be interested, that's a whole nother ballgame.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, you have so many pockets, you know, you have, put it like this, you have clubs that do nights that are specifically for that scene and that culture.
Yeah.
You know, like the club will one night do a more of a Latin night and then the next night it'd be R&B night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
From a club owner's perspective, that's good when you can get people come in.
Makes a good business.
Yeah, make a good business. But there is no intermingling amongst people to be able to enjoy themselves, you know.
It's that general separation thing again. Right. It's like, this is for you.
Right.
Friday nights are for this type of person. Right. Saturday nights this type of person.
Right.
Sundays this type of person.
Right. So, I mean, I think lack of venues, but one of the main reasons why is because we have a 2 o'clock curfew too, though.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's always been like that in Detroit, you know. That's one of the reasons why I don't know if you noticed, but I noticed that if you see a lot of DJs from abroad, and when they put up their tour dates, you rarely see Detroit.
Yeah.
That's because of, I mean, partly because of venue availability. Yeah. And it's also because of, like, for me, I think it's a 2 o'clock curfew because Detroit, people don't go out until 11:30, 12 o'clock at night.
And then it's done.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, so, and then, you know, so that's one aspect of it. It's such a small market now, you know, and it's always been, but, you know, it was one of them things where people, the bottle service came along.
Yeah.
You know, and sort of took away a little bit of creativity club owners and promoters had, you know. It comes a long way from just having four walls and a speaker and a juice bar.
Yeah.
And now, like,
yeah.
You know, so I think the lack of venues, the fact that bottle service crowd, because there was one point when I was doing I've always made it a point to keep a residency here no matter what goes on.
Yeah,
you know,
no matter where you are.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always did a monthly or quarterly residency anywhere. And I can remember back in 2007 when I was working with this local DJ. And I was like, you know what? Let's kind of bring our worlds together.
Yeah.
You play pretty decent music. It's
best compliment ever.
But I respect that because I understand your market.
You know,
that was my thing. I understand your market. I understand. I respect the fact that you know your market. So let me bring in a little bit of the underground aspect of what we do so we can create something that would be a little bit more attainable for people who are too, or who are, I wouldn't say nervous, but uninvited to come to the more of the underground parties, you know?
Yeah.
And I did this night called Radio School where it was at Blue, Club Blue downtown.
Downtown, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I think that it was a great venue because it wasn't quite an underground club.
Yeah.
But sometimes they had good DJs.
Is
to
it
come
still
back.
Open?
It's still open.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm like, okay, well, let's start something, you know? And we did it for a while. It got to be, you know, it was good, but it was always something that, for me, you know, it was, if it wasn't the DJ booth set up wrong, you know, or the fact that people still didn't go out until 12:30 at night, you know what I mean? They get to the club and it's hour and a half. Yeah. I'm like, man, you know, I was practically, you know, my whole thing is when I was doing parties, I was sort of more vocal on getting the fact that people need to come out earlier.
Since you
got a 2 o'clock curfew, you know?
You have to, yeah.
So,
Can I just move this?
Yeah. Okay. There you go. So it worked out for a while. But I think that, you know, after it just worked out, but I can't remember what happened as to what we stopped it, but I know what happened. I moved it to a different club.
Yeah. Where
moved
you
it to, yeah, I moved it to this place called Oslo.
Okay.
Which was it was a sushi restaurant on top.
Yeah.
An underground small little club that fit 250 people.
Amazing.
You know, and it went well. And Oslo was considered like an institution well because it was a very, very modern place, you know, very minimal, modern.
Yeah.
And downstairs it was all black with very, you know, architecturally great, you know. And I moved it down there and it went great as well. But then they closed and, you know, they went through different management and all that stuff. And so I just stopped it, you know. But, you know, I've always tried to do something to give back to the community other than just playing. Doing the festival time, but I've still been a little bit perplexed on as to what would make a great scene here in the city to sort of flourish into something that would be more attainable for people who want to go out for the music, you know?
I have this conversation probably on a monthly basis with my manager.
Yeah.
And with Chuck as well.
Yeah.
On a regular, and it's like, and people from Detroit and people from outside of Detroit, and it's like, what needs, and every time it comes to it, I'm like, it just needs more people.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Like,
on a Saturday night, you'll have a party at TV Lounge, you'll have a party at Magic Stick. You might have a party at Leyland, right? If you've got one massive artist at Magic Stick, every other party is kind of dwindling because there's 650,000 people in Detroit itself. How many of those people go out raving? 4,000?
Of course.
But on a venue-wise, I do think there's a lack of, like, great club, like electronic music clubs. And I think there's so much space in Detroit.
Yeah,
There's so much space. There's so many amazing buildings. I think it needs, like, Spotlight is doing.
Yeah.
Spotlight's a really interesting venue.
Yeah.
And I love the concept.
I haven't been there yet, but I've only seen it. But I can imagine it. I mean, I see it and I see how they're marketing it and their whole vibe. And I'm just like, this is what's up, right?
It's dope. It's really nice. The one thing that I would say is that I feel like they're just kind of like pigeonholing themselves into one thing.
Right, right.
And for me, that's what Detroit's always done.
Right.
And it's like, let's just widen it a little bit.
Yeah, of course.
And let's kind of allow more people in.
Yeah.
And kind of market to more people.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you might have a bigger thing.
Right, right.
But that venue's amazing.
Yeah.
It's special. It's, yeah, it's a yeah. great
vibe. I want to go down there, but for some reason, I want to go down there during the daytime to see the venue versus...
I haven't been during the club.
Right,
I haven't
okay.
been to the club. I've only right. been for like a drink.
Exactly. Because
they do like a record shop.
Yes, 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 yes.
I wish they did food, but that's right. my also thing is like, right, I think for a venue in Detroit, this wouldn't happen in most other cities.
Right.
But I think a venue in Detroit that does something in the day... where people can go and work,
yeah,
like where the hipster crew can go and work. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have a nice little cafe restaurant in the daytime,
yeah,
and then at night
right,
it's a club.
Right, yeah, of course.
You need a venue that kind of brings a whole community.
Yeah.
Maybe maybe some studios to the side,
yeah,
like some art studios where like you can get fashion people to come and create clothes
yeah,
and
of course.
The artists, and then you got music studios. Needs a whole collective of in... one place
right.
to kind of make something
yeah
where you every day you've got 100 mm-hmm. 200 people going mm-hmm. in and around there mm-hmm. to kind of make it special
yeah yeah
it's doable
right
I really like for me I really want to do something
yeah
here that's like brings that but again you also just need the people
yeah yeah I mean that's the thing you know people is and they're important. I think that having venues is very challenging because, you know, by it being such a struggle, I don't think most venues have the patience.
Or the money.
yeah. yeah, they have, of course.
Yeah.
The patience and the financial resources yeah. to be able to be to do that. And cultivate the crowd.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
You know, that's... Because, you know, we're talking about, you know, years before you really start to... to get that crowd,
yeah.
you know, on a routine basis,
yeah.
you know?
Takes time.
Spotlight has been... They've been fortunate enough to come out at the right time to be able to do that, you know? Because they haven't been open that long, but they have been doing pretty decent... you know, work and it's,
yeah.
and it, but they also based from what I know, they also based in the art community.
Yeah. 100%.
You know, which takes a visionary to understand that,
yeah.
that you need to cultivate the crowd, you
Have
know,
to.
And a lot of club owners and people who do clubs, they don't really think at it from that point of view.
Well, it's a business, isn't it?
Right.
I think that's the way
right.
you look
right.
at it.
Right. I mean, I've dealt with a few club owners, you know, in the past where, you know, they wanted to be down with the music, but they understood that, you know, it's not going to be financially feasible for them to put it on, which is, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But then their regular nights, which would be a Saturday night bottle service, and they just go full force on that,
yeah, yeah.
you know, and they realize like, okay, am I wasting my time doing... you know, more of the underground acts or smaller clubs when I can just concentrate on just making this money or moving on this side of town and just being a sports bar.
Yeah. Dude, I totally agree. I had, you know, Troy Ramperoop. I had lunch with him yesterday. He's like a good friend of mine, but he's done the same.
That's actually who I was talking about.
Yeah, yeah he's done the same.
And more power to him, you know, which is great, but, you know, you run into... people like, you know, such as himself and, you know, they have to sort of, you know, tread the water a little bit, you know, a little bit differently, but still want to do things, you know.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, realistically, everyone has to put food on their table.
Right.
Right. And you have to put food on your table before you put somebody else's food on your table.
Yeah.
Especially when you got kids and a family and things like that. And I think that's also, we do it because we love it.
Indeed.
We don't do this to put food on the table. We're just,
right.
we're just lucky enough that food
right,
gets on
right.
our table from
exactly.
doing it.
Exactly.
When I get it, when club owners change things up,
yeah,
I understand. It's
yeah.
business, if
yeah.
you know what I mean. And
yeah.
and as much as it's a horrible pill to swallow for us that are trying to create something, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Totally get it.
Yeah, I had a, I was in D.C. a few weeks ago, and the guys asked me, like, they asked me and they said, Stacey, we're thinking about possibly expanding and wanting to do something in Detroit. Do you think we should do it? He's like, I want to come there and check it out, you know. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's definitely opportunity is there, you know, but you just got to know you have to be ready for, I mean, you don't live here, so
yeah,
you just can't, you know, expect it to be like your club here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So you got to be ready for, you got to come down and be here for a minute to understand, you know, and see the city for itself, you know.
And the politics that goes on in the scene. There's a lot of politics. For a small city, there's a lot of politics.
Yeah.
Which I actually, as an outsider, I respect to a certain extent, because the people that lead the politics are the people that are doing the best things in the city for the scene.
Right.
And I respect that. I'm like, fair play. But if you're a new person coming in, you have to understand that.
Right.
And it takes a while to get that.
Yeah, I mean... Wait, we're talking about 20, 30 years where I've been thinking about, I'm like, man, I wouldn't say that long, more like 15 years where, you know, where the scene, you know, took a transition, you know, so it was some potential there, you know, and, you know, and it also had to deal with, you know, like there were these parties back in 2002, 2003, where it was more of the Arabic crowd.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
The DJs would play more of the radio mixes of dance music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, they're, you know, the remixes like the commercial things. And they would do it in this restaurant / lounge.
Yeah.
But it would be off the chain.
Really?
And I'm just like, man, I mean, you know, everybody, you know, pretty girls, guys coming in, you know, it was bottle service a little. But, I mean, I found myself going to it just to feel a bit of the energy of what the pulse of the city.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just to see. I mean, I've always been that type of person where I'm like, I want to see what's going on, even if it ain't my type of music, because I've heard shit, bad music in clubs, and still was able to appreciate what was going on.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, this could be, I mean, this is great for them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why can't we be on this level where, you know, you can get people coming in and enjoying themselves, you know, and, you know, not having to be a rave atmosphere all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because when, like, going to England, going to, you know, Spain or whatever, you know, there's still those type of people as well, but they're getting down
all the time.
You know what I mean?
Every fucking weekend.
You know, go to Ibiza, spending $20,000 on a bottle and a table. You know, they're gigging to Will Clark, Stacey Pullen, or whatever.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's great, you know, to a certain extent. But, you know, it's just the different aspects and the contrast and what happens all, you know, different parts of the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, me coming back home and wanting to bring that home.
It's hard, isn't it?
You know,
it's hard.
You're different, so many different, you know, aspects and wanting to just open up a club or do a club, you know?
Which makes sense why there isn't many artist-driven clubs in Detroit.
Right.
Because you get that a lot around the world. Maybe it's old artists that kind of turn around and be like, okay, I'm done with the artist side of things.
Right.
But I know I can make a fucking great club.
Yes. Yes.
Whereas here, we know there's the artist,
and
there's the artist with money here, because money goes a long way in Detroit, like we spoke about earlier.
Yeah.
But do they want to deal with the shit
that
you have to deal with on top of that?
Yeah, not yet that too, but it's also, you know, like I said, the 2 o'clock curfew that has a lot to do with it, you know, and then...
That's the best thing about illegal parties.
You
can get away with doing underground parties that kind of go on till whenever. But.
Yeah, but you also dealing with an element where people feel as though it's just going to be drugs.
Yeah.
You know, totally. A drug after party type vibe, which is a turnoff.
Yeah.
For a lot of people who,
especially women.
Yeah.
I don't mean in a disrespectful way, but that's when you become a very male heavy party, which you don't want.
Right.
You don't want it brings a different atmosphere.
That's the only thing. Yeah. The only thing about doing like the after hour parties is that you have that element to it, because there was a club called The Works that was here years ago.
I remember.
You know, and it was at one time it was the go-to spot for after hours, but it was
got dangerous.
Yeah, it was grimy. But at the same time, I can remember I go to the Arches in Sub Club and like it had the same type of vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's going off.
Getting mental. You know? But I think that's maybe you're right though with the whole 2 o'clock thing, because in the UK, depending on the club, it's like some go to six.
Yeah.
And you can still have that vibe, but in a controlled environment.
Right.
Where I guess when you're doing it illegally, there's only a certain amount of control that you have.
Yeah.
Which is definitely, What's your plans for the next year, for the rest of the year? We're in January now.
I'm planning to get some more music out. Definitely, man. That's goal number one. I've been transitioning slowly from Logic to Ableton.
Traitor. Absolute traitor.
I'm going to use both of them, put it like that. But I've been a Logic guy.
Yeah.
I've been a Logic guy for all these years. So I'm just getting, getting a little used to wanting to do things in a different creative way, just a little.
Yeah.
Well,
in what way?
Idea-wise, idea-wise is Ableton. I mean, it's kind of a conversation I've had many times, but from a creative standpoint, Ableton, I feel that brings a little bit more of the creative side of it, instead of just pressing record.
Yeah.
With Logic, Logic sounds better, from mixing down and everything. So I'm just sort of in transition and wanting, just thinking about, I'm like, okay, do I want to fix something that's not broken?
Yeah.
Or do I need a little bit more different angle on how I approach it?
Yeah.
So apart from getting new music out, man, concentrate a little bit here since the states have been open. The United States has sort of opened up their market, and everybody's over here coming, Concentrating a little bit more here in the states, doing parties and doing cities that I haven't done. I'm in the process of trying to get my rights back from one of my last albums that I did.
Who's that signed to?
It was, the big guys are Virgin.
Motherfuckers.
Yeah, right. And it was, it was great at the time, but you want to stay away from that word called in perpetuity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tough.
Yeah. Well, the advance was great, and it was great at the time, but
advance
doesn't
last forever though, does it?
Right. So I'm like, okay, but the music, they're not doing nothing with it. They probably don't even know they have it.
Yeah.
So my goal is to get the rights back for that album, so I can have the rights to all of my music back. Other than that, man, just sort of kind of building up, my on a personal level. I love mid-century modern homes, and I like buying vintage furniture, and that's like my pastime that I really like to buy vintage furniture and stuff like that. So I'm always doing something else to the house,
Really?
I'd love that.
Where do you go in Detroit to get shit? Because I'm in the process of doing stuff to this house.
There is a place called Mod Space which is in small little, is it Clawson?
Okay.
Yeah, it's a smaller place. You have to enter through the back, knock on the door. Hey, it's me, Password. Password is so I like doing that stuff, but So yeah, I'm just sort of you know, getting ready for hopefully the Ibiza season starts back, you know, strong. And you know, I just signed with NGE.
Oh, amazing. Welcome.
Right.
Who's your agent there?
Luke.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So we just started working together. So hopefully that relationship will be great for this coming year, you know. But it's just been, you know, with COVID, man. You know, for every gig that comes through, 3 gigs get canceled, you know, and you know, it's, you know, I haven't been to Europe in a minute now, so it's,
you're not like, missing much at the moment.
Right. Yeah, so it's, yeah. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, plan out. I mean, you can't really plan out because, you know, the guidelines and, you know, COVID restrictions, just like, so I'm just kind of patiently waiting, you know, for things to sort of, you know, level out a little.
Yeah.
You know, so in the meantime, it's just, you know, trying to be creative in the studio, man, you know, and trying to get the right pieces in order. And then when the time comes for, you know, everyone to be back to normal, to say the least, you know, I can, you know, go full back and to, you know, traveling my, you know, my weekends,
Yeah. It definitely changed us, didn't it?
Yeah.
Changed the world.
Yeah, man. I had a bit struggle in the first beginning, you know, was like, you know, traveling the world for 28, 29 years, and then it coming to an abrupt halt.
Yeah.
Like, threw my body out of whack, you know? I mean, I had like bits of anxiety, you know? It just like, you know, because my body clock is finally catching up.
I know, right?
To where I'm not getting on planes, you know? And it caught up to me, I would say, about 3 months later, I was physically and mentally fragile.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I get that. For me, it was actually more recently for me. First 6 months to 8 months, I was back in the UK. So I was just like writing a shit ton of music.
Right.
And just doing me, really, and just kind of enjoying the time with my family back in the UK and things like that. But it's been more so like towards the end of last year when touring started again.
Right.
And like,
okay,
that's when it got me the most.
Right.
And I was just like, fuck, what is it? And I...
Yeah, I can see that too.
It's like that kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, yeah, because you kind of... You lose a step, and then you get back out there. I mean, for me, it was like, you know, I lost a step because I haven't been traveling, and then, you know, you go back out and play, and you're like, okay, has the scene changed?
Is it the same? Totally. And then... I don't know about you, but I just would question myself.
Yeah.
Like, and then for me, it's like, oh, we haven't sold this show out.
Right.
And no one likes me anymore.
Right.
And you have to, for me, I have to like try and ground myself.
Yeah, of course.
And like, I think because it was taken away, I don't know about you, but because it was taken away, it kind of made me realize how fragile it is.
Yeah.
But also, how do I make it so good, my career, that it's never going to get taken away.
Right.
You know what I mean? That I'm always going to be part of the furniture, what I mean? And that pressure that I put on myself with music coming out and shows, that's what got me.
Yeah. Most. Yeah. I definitely understand that because, you know, everybody's been out of the loop for a while, you know, and... You know, we've been kind of out of touch, especially in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of for me, I couldn't write at all. I couldn't be creative at all because, you know, I mean, like I said, I wasn't in a great headspace, you know, mentally and physically. I mean, I was like having anxiety and panic issues where, you know, like I said, just threw my body for a loop and you start thinking. I mean, I'm sure millions, we're not the only people who had to deal with this, but coming from an artistic point of view, when you're used to a certain way of life and being creative and traveling and being around people is your main career. And then that comes and then the pandemic happens, and that's one of the main reasons why we're in a pandemic, is because people are around each other and flying to different countries. You know, it's just like everything that we strive on, they're saying no to right now, or the pandemic is not, you know, prohibiting it right now.
And still, to a certain extent.
You know, like they say, not be around people. I'm like, shit, okay. My last gig was 3,000 people. Okay, they're saying you shouldn't fly. I'm like, fuck, man. I mean.
10 flights in the last month.
Exactly. Okay, you're not supposed to touch things. Well, I'm in different hotel rooms, you know what I mean? Different public spaces, you know. You might share a drink with your buddy or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? We've all did it over the years, you know?
It's almost, I don't know how you found coming back, but it has changed.
Yes.
The world is a different place.
It is.
I don't know if I love it.
Right.
If I'm honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Because now you have to be paranoid on where I'm like, I got to get a test. You know, I got family.
Yeah.
You know, I come from more gig and I'm like,
I don't want to give you.
I mean, that already happened one time and I don't want it to happen again.
We are the super spreaders of the world.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, yes, indeed. So, you know, I mean, just taking one day at a time, I guess, you know, or 1 week at a time, 1 month at a time, you know. But I'm ready to sort of get back because, you know, it's been such a part of my life all these years that, you know, I'm getting to the point where I'm like, okay, well, you know, being patient, though. But, you know, at the same time, it's a bit frustrating.
100%.
It's a bit frustrating to know.
How long have you been doing it for?
I've been DJing since 85, which and I was 16 years old. But professionally, since 92.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
To say you've been doing something for 29 years.
Yeah, it's been a quite a fruitful career, you know. I still feel very blessed to be able to get on a plane and travel and, you know, meet the people and, you know, them respect me. I mean, now it's me being in the game for a while, you know. People and promoters and clubs and, you know, I'm older than half of these kids in the club now, you know, and, you know, which is great because I've been able to adapt to the different generations, which is quite difficult because a lot of, you know, DJs of my caliber haven't been able to adapt to the different,
totally,
you know,
yeah,
and you know, I credit that to just being able to understand that, you know, generations change and they shift. You know, a lot of DJs, they don't want to do anything different; they just want to keep the same, you know, redundant type of attitude. Which, you know, I mean, as long if they're happy, that's fine. But for me, you know, I've always been accepted of change.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's why I think I've been able to have such longevity because I've been able to adapt to that, you know? I mean, you know, playing different markets.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, you know, maybe not taking as much money, but just being able, to go do it, you know?
How do you deal with the lows? Because you've obviously dealt with a lot of lows over the years and a lot of highs. But for me, the lows are hard.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, everyone in life deals with lows and highs and lows. Yeah, you have to because it makes the highs better.
Yeah, yeah.
How over the years have you dealt with those? Because you've gone through so many generations of dance. Because realistically, the people that go to clubs, it's a very small part of their lifetime because a lot of people stop clubbing when they have family, when they get married or have kids and things like that. You've gone through a lot of those.
I would say the youth keeps me young you know, the more young people that I meet, the more clubs that I play keeps that youth amongst me. You know, keeps me youthful, you know? That's probably the most important thing that I can say I've been able to, my comfort zone, my comfort vice, you know, because I'm able to meet the young people and it keeps me young still, you know? From the lows, for the lows, it's, I don't really look, I mean, you have some bad gigs, you know, you have some times when the phone doesn't ring that much because, you know, maybe the market has changed in different parts of the world or whatnot. But, you know, I mean, I just look at it as me looking deep inside myself to say, where am I going to be satisfied? Am I going to stay the same?
Yeah.
Or am I going to be able to understand that there's a shift and sort of still be an artist?
Yeah.
But come at it from an angle where, I mean, I already know. I've been doing it for so long.
Yeah.
I already know the game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's how I look at it, you know? So it's been quite a challenging, you know, years, because, you know, now it's like, you know, everybody looks at, you know, the Detroit guys and me particularly as, you know, legendary status, which is great. I'm glad to be able to, you know, have that, you know, and who would have thought, you know, young inner city, you know, guy growing up in the city, traveling to Paris and going to the Eiffel Tower. You know what I mean? First time I went to Paris, I'm like, man, I'm here.
Yeah, what the fuck is...
Yes,
yeah,
what, man. Yeah. And I still get that when I still travel.
Yeah.
You know, but even more importantly, it was, you know, when I still able to be humble enough to appreciate the small little things, you know, because, I mean, I've been doing it for a while. So, I mean, every time I speak to someone, I'm like, wow, well, how old are you?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I look a little younger when I
Me too. That's why I look like a 15-year-old.
Yeah, you know, and then you got the younger generation DJs who are they don't know the history. Mm. Well, I wouldn't say they don't know the history, but some of them they don't, but you know, I think that they get into it because it's trendy.
Yeah.
You know?
It's fashion, right?
Yeah, it's fashion, you know?
That's the difference with the scene now.
Right.
Is it, and I've been saying this a lot recently, that it was never cool to be a DJ.
Right.
It was never cool to make electronic dance music.
Right, yeah.
It was, you were the introverts of society.
Yeah.
And now it's because of social media, because of the commercialization of dance music, people can make a fuck ton of money.
Yeah.
And that's what they see.
Yes, indeed, indeed.
And it's not necessarily about... I don't necessarily think that everyone needs to know the history of whatever they do.
Mm-hmm.
But in a scene like this,
right,
the history is still so relevant, because it was only like 30 years ago.
Right.
If you know what I mean. It's kind of like hip hop, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's such a new genre of music, and everyone is still alive.
Not everyone, but a lot of people
are still alive.
Right.
That created it. And there is a kind of a disconnect now.
Definitely. I mean, it's partly because of, like, I mean, it's a bit of, it's a bit of the same scenario as the promoters just wanting to do parties just to make money. You know, some of the DJs want to do it just because it's cool and it's, you know, brings them a little fame because of social media.
Yeah, 100%. I say this so many times on this podcast as well. I used to live in Ibiza, and I'd record the podcast for We Love Space on Sundays. And that party was, for me, the most influential party of my childhood, where
I say childhood, teenhood, I was 17, 18, 19 when I was working there.
Right.
And they would book artists from Carl Craig to Disclosure. And that's when Disclosure weren't even Disclosure of what they are today. And Carl was there with his 909 and kind of doing his thing. Jeff was there. Jeff Mills was there. They booked everyone.
Yeah, I know they did. I know. It's funny you may bring that up because when I first started playing Ibiza, it was all about the promoters bringing in the DJs. Yeah. I mean, like you say, Space, they brought in an array of DJs from all different genres, and you had a party.
Proper party.
You know, and that's how it, like, when I played Ibiza for the first time, I played for Man U Mission.
Yeah.
You know?
I bet that was an eye-opener for you.
Yes. Yes. Indeed, man.
Yeah.
And it was about the promoters, like Man U Mission and We Love Space, bringing in and creating.
They loved it.
Yes.
They loved it.
Yes.
Like, they were artists in themselves.
Yes.
They weren't trying to be the DJ. Mm-hmm. They weren't trying to be the producer. They loved, like, some of the promoters then knew more about music than I did.
Right.
And I was the DJ,
yeah,
if you know what I mean. They knew more artists than I did. And now it's very rare that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even know who does it now.
I tell you who does it is where we met. The guys at Cross.
Oh, right, right, yeah, true that.
In America, at least, and I'm not bad-mouthing any promoters in America, but for me, Cross and Carlos at Factory 93, they are the ones that they have such an amazing following as a brand that they don't, the brand, the customers that buy the tickets don't actually need to know the lineup.
Yeah.
So they sell out beforehand.
I have been noticing that because I've been working with them a little bit more since the pandemic, you know, because working more in the States, and I've been noticing that as well.
Special. Yeah. It's really special what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I really hope that there's more of that.
Yeah.
And I think that they, going back to Detroit, I think Detroit can do that as well.
Right, right.
Because you can do, it's technically a BC market. So you have all these amazing artists coming to America. You could do it in Detroit.
Right.
It's just getting the right people to kind of bring it all together.
It's always been the case, man. Yeah. It's always been the case.
Dude.
We shall.
One day, man. We've just done an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's great, though.
Thank you so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you inviting me down.
Thank you. Before we leave, how can people follow you, listen to your music?
My Instagram is StacyPullen_official. Same as Facebook, StacyPullen_official. Twitter, StacyPullenOfficial.
Usual.
Yes, it's all under one umbrella, man, you know. And you can, what else? Those are my social media handles, so get at me.
Sick, man. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Let's keep in touch.
We got it. We got it going, man.
See you soon.
Perfect.
And that's a wrap. Hope you enjoyed it. Big thanks for Stacy to come down in the studio. Please share it. Hit subscribe. Give us a little review. Keep safe. See you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.